Hello and welcome to the podcast version of Scripps Five Must Know Things, this time for the business week ended 26th April 2024. This is Ian Haydock. This time, 2023's top-selling drugs and the COVID cliff, falling sales force Roche to reassess priorities, Phase 3 immunology win for Sanofi, BMS's strong pipeline, and which companies could be acquired next. Pfizer-BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine Comirnaty toppled after recording the highest ever annual sales for a pharmaceutical in 2022, while Novo Nordisk's Ozempic climbed rapidly. But Merck & Co.'s immuno-oncology blockbuster Keytruda was secure in the number one spot in 2023 as COVID-19 receded, with just over $25 billion in revenues during the year, Eleanor Malone writes. One of the most notable features of the top 20 list in 2023 was the huge fall in aggregate revenues. While the top 20 drugs in 2022 generated $249 billion in revenues, the top 20 total was down to $209 billion last year. The $40 billion shortfall reflected the precipitous drop in sales of the pandemic products. In fact, while the three COVID-19 products that were among 2022's top 20 drugs contributed nearly $79 billion that year, 2023's top 20 total included just over $18 billion from the two mRNA vaccines Comirnaty and Spikevax, and no COVID-19 therapeutic revenues at all, representing a COVID-19 cliff of more than $60 billion. But while pandemic revenues went into retreat and old-time star performers like AbbVie's immunology drug Humira and BMS's myeloma drug Revlimid suffered erosion from off-patent competition, healthy growth was seen in other quarters. Notably, Keytruda continued its steep ascent, adding more than $4 billion in annual sales to rise by 19% on the previous year. The expansion reflected increased uptake in earlier stage cancer indications, including triple-negative breast cancer and renal cell carcinoma. Meanwhile, Novo Nordisk's GLP-1 inhibitor Ozempic, approved by the US FDA in 2017 to improve glycemic control in patients with type 2 diabetes and in 2020 to reduce cardiovascular events in type 2 diabetics with heart disease, grew by 65% and rose from 13th to 3rd place with $13.9 billion in revenues. See the full article and related infographics for all the details of last year's top-selling drugs. COVID-19 was a nightmare on one level. On another, it was a bonanza for Roche Holding and its investors. With the pandemic now in the rearview mirror, sales of therapies for the virus have fallen markedly. This and the appreciation of the Swiss franc against most currencies left Roche's first quarter sales 6% lower than in the same period last year, Elizabeth Cairns writes. Knowing this was coming, the group has taken steps to improve its growth, and that means culling unpromising therapies from its pipeline. Four Phase 1 stage assets have been dropped, two of them in cancer. "We have significantly reviewed the portfolio," said CEO Thomas Schinecker on an earnings call. "We have asked our R&D people to look in three categories. The category which is highly promising, where we believe we need to accelerate our portfolio. The category where we know the likelihood of success is very low and we don't have the opportunity to be first in class or best in disease. And then there is the middle category where we still need data to decide." He added, "This prioritization process helps us to speed up the ongoing projects and helps us also bring in new things that do fulfill these criteria." The assets now in the bin include belfarafenib, an RAS and BRAF inhibitor, which had been under investigation in combination with Cotelic in solid tumours. Belfarafenib's originator, South Korea's Hanmi Pharmaceuticals, still appears to be investigating it in locally advanced or metastatic tumours. Also out is the bispecific antibody RG6286, a study of which in colorectal cancer had been due to read out in 2026. These are joined by the LEP-B inhibitor RG6319, targeted at urinary tract infections, and RG6163, which had been intended for psychiatric disorders. Neither a specific indication or a mechanism for the latter molecule had been revealed. The former, however, seems to have been replaced in the pipeline by RD6436, another LEP-B inhibitor for UTIs. Roche also confirmed the canning of camonsertib. The Swiss group handed rights to the kinase inhibitor back to its originator, Repare Therapeutics, in February. Oddly, that decision came shortly after Roche began a phase 2 study in solid tumours, paying Repare a $40 million milestone for the privilege. Investigation of the neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder therapy Enspryng in myasthenia gravis has also been canned by Roche following disappointing phase 3 data. Sanofi, in the midst of recasting itself as an immunology-focused firm, revealed a successful top-line phase 3 readout in immune thrombocytopenia, or ITP, on 23rd April for its BTK inhibitor, rilzabrutinib. The asset is one of 12 drugs and vaccines forecast to deliver up to 5 billion euros each in peak sales, with several candidates, including rilzabrutinib, expected to offer pipeline-in-a-product potential, like the company's Regeneron Pharmaceuticals partnered Dupixent, Mandy Jackson writes. Rilzabrutinib is one of two BTK inhibitors Sanofi acquired in its $3.7 billion purchase of Principia Biopharma in 2020, along with tolebrutinib for multiple sclerosis. Principia and Sanofi have developed rilzabrutinib as a first-in-class BTK inhibitor for immunology and inflammation, but that strategy has been met with scepticism, especially after the drug failed in its first phase 3 program for the treatment of pemphigus vulgaris or pemphigus foliaceus in 2021. However, Sanofi now plans to file for approval in ITP during the second half of 2024 based on the phase 3 LUNA-3 trial results. The company also plans to start phase 3 trials of rilzabrutinib in 2024 in chronic spontaneous urticaria and prurigo nodularis after reporting positive phase 2 results in CSU earlier this year. In addition, readouts are expected from a phase 2 asthma study in the first half of 2024 and from phase 2b trials in IgG4-related disease and warm autoimmune hemolytic anemia during the second half of this year. Tolebrutinib is the more closely watched BTK inhibitor in Sanofi's pipeline, with results from the phase 3 Gemini 1 and 2 trials in relapsing multiple sclerosis and the phase 3 Hercules trial in progressing MS expected in mid-2024, though there is some scepticism around that program too, given the phase 3 failure of Merck KGaA's BTK inhibitor, evobrutinib, last year. However, Sanofi's conviction remains high in both of its drugs in the BTK class, with the expectation that each asset will generate 2 to 5 billion euros in peak sales. It remains to be seen whether rilzabrutinib can turn into a multi-indication powerhouse with at least some of the heft of Dupixent, Sanofi's IL-4-13 inhibitor approved in the US for atopic dermatitis, asthma, chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps, eosinophilic esophagitis, and prurigo nodularis, with $10.7 billion euros in 2023 sales and a potential future chronic obstructive pulmonary disease indication. Analysts expressed some doubt about rilzabrutinib's prospects as recently as February, when Sanofi reported positive phase 2 results for its drug in CSU, an indication where Novartis plans to file its BTK inhibitor, remibrutinib, for approval later this year, after succeeding in phase 3 last year. ITP is an indication where Sanofi may have a first-in-class opportunity, however. Monica Shaw joined Bristol Myers Squibb as head of major markets in September. Based in Zurich, she oversees markets including Western Europe and Canada. But the industry is in a tricky place, contending with political pressure to cut drug prices and reduce spending more generally, Elizabeth Cairns writes. It's clear, particularly post-COVID, that a lot of payers have gone into cost containment mode. I think for the first time we're seeing a willingness to not have the latest innovation for patients on the market, Shaw told Scrip. She is keen to change minds inside and outside the biopharma sector to improve access to novel medicines throughout Europe. My fascination, probably the red thread in my career, has been launching new products, Shaw said. I've launched over 15 products, and I'm just endlessly passionate about every little step that gets that amazing science in a test tube to a patient. Even as we're getting some really exciting science through, what seeing all these launches has highlighted to me is you can develop the best product in the world. It can be efficacious, it can be safe, but you need to really address an unmet need, Shaw said. She added that industry needed to be able to have a discussion with payers about why it's important to reward the meeting of those needs. It is a more recent launch, that of Camzyos for obstructive cardiomyopathy, that she considers one of her proudest achievements. This is a space that hasn't had any new innovation in decades, she said. BMS obtained the drug via its $13 billion acquisition of MyoKardia in 2020, and while the cardiac myosin inhibitor does indeed represent a meaningful therapeutic advance, its launch has been slower than Bristol had originally hoped. Another advance of which Shaw is proud is BMS's record in CAR-T, which she refers to as the best CAR-T platform in the industry, with two CAR-Ts, Abecma and Breyanzi, for multiple myeloma and lymphoma, but also the promise of the future. Like others, she believes that CAR-T has utility far beyond cancer and is potentially applicable to any B-cell mediated disease. BMS is investigating CD19 NEX-T, a CD19 targeted CAR-T originated by Juno Therapeutics, in autoimmune conditions, as well as the more established indication of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. BMS also has many other advances in the works, often aimed at expanding the reach of its established drugs. Opdivo is a product that continues to give, Shaw said, highlighting the checkpoint inhibitor's potential for hepatocellular carcinoma. The group also plans to expand Breyanzi's approved indications into other forms of lymphoma and Camzyos, which Shaw says has been a huge opportunity for patients with its approved indication of obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, could be even bigger, potentially, in the non-obstructive form of the disease. As for products still in the pipeline, Shaw highlighted the group's LPA1 antagonist, BMS-986278, which is in the Phase 3 ALOFT program in both idiopathic and progressive pulmonary fibrosis, following a hit in the latter form of the disease in September. Finally, in the latest episode of Scripps M&A podcast, Joseph Haas, Kevin Grogan, and Edwin Elmhurst highlight some of the companies they think are the most appealing takeout candidates for deep-pocketed potential buyers. Specifically, Haas takes a look at Viking Therapeutics and the potential of its Phase 2 candidates in obesity and metabolic dysfunction-associated steatohepatitis. Grogan overviews UK-based Verona Pharma and its Phase 3 candidate for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and Elmhurst profiles three companies, Altimmune, Xenon Pharmaceuticals, and Crinetics Pharmaceuticals, with promising assets that could attract companies seeking external innovation. Check out the podcast in full for all the details of their discussions, which is available through all your usual podcast platforms. That's all for this week. Many thanks for listening. Follow the link below to access all of these stories in full, for which a subscription is required, or sign up for a free trial to see what you're missing. Bye for now.